His grace reaches me. Even me. His grace can reach anyone. And that's what we find out in this event in Jesus' life. That His grace and His love can reach even someone that has been controlled by Satan for many years. In the New Testament, we read a lot about something called demon possession. And that's what we want to talk about today, not necessarily even if demon possession is around today, but we know a lot of people do have Satan, or demons, we would say, living inside of them, not necessarily against their will, but simply because they've invited them in. Some people are so deep into the occult. Some people are so far from God. Some people have been involved in drugs and alcohol for so long that literally they have an altered mind, an altered view of life, an altered way of living, and that not only affects them, but we know it affects a lot of people. And I know there are many of us here today that maybe wonder, are there times in my life, I don't know why I keep thinking the way I do. I mean, how much of a hold does Satan have in my life? How much does he really control me? How much way do I give? What kind of opening do I make? What kind of opportunities do I give for evil to live in my life? And it may not always be evil actions, but maybe they're evil thoughts. Things that we continually to dwell upon, and certainly they change the way we act and the way we live and the way we treat people. And so sometimes we wonder, even today, are people possessed? And certainly as Christians, Satan does not have reign and rule in our lives, but he certainly can have influence in our lives. And so what do we do about it? And what do we do as far as trying to help other people? And you may even come across some people, they say, I just believe that there's some kind of spirit that is in my life that I just can't overcome. I've tried. I've sought out help. I've worked at it for years. I've run out of options. What do I do? Where do I turn? And maybe this helps us in this story, this event, this situation in Jesus' life to find out how this happened in this man's life. So we want to find out what kind of effect, what kind of influence did these spirits have in his life and even in the people around him. Jesus just came onto the shore, and if you remember, he crossed over the Sea of Galilee. And interesting, it was during the storm, you remember, it was such a violent storm, and the disciples, and many of them were trained fishermen. I mean, they were used to the boats and the storms and being out in the middle of the night. I mean, they were used to all of that, but this was such a fierce storm, and Jesus was sleeping. But they woke Jesus and said, "Don't you care that we drown? We're going to die, and you're sleeping." And you remember Jesus stood up in the boat and said, "Peace, be still." And the storm dissipated immediately. The waves were calm. They were there in safety. And you remember the response of the disciples? They said, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves, even nature obeys his voice." Well, that's the kind of power that Jesus has over storms. I wonder what kind of power Jesus has over the storms in our life, though. And we're going to find out even with this man. And so they've come across, and now they've come to the shore. They were met by a demon-possessed man. Look what it says. "For a long time, this man had not worn clothes, but he lived in a house." And he did not live in a house, but he lived in the tombs. Now, maybe we know some people like that. Not necessarily they run around naked all the time, but their life is so evident that we see the things that are going on. And maybe we even see things in them and about them they hardly can see themselves. But that's what this man was like. He was out of control. The people in the town didn't know what to do with him. And so they basically banished him. They said, "We don't want you to live here." And now he was living. Where was he living? He was really a living man living among the dead. He was alive, really, but he was dead. He was dead to everything. He was dead to relationships. He was dead to his family. He was dead to his society. He was dead to himself. The demon had taken such control of him. And this has been going on for a long time. I mean, how do you get out of something where it's been putting its claws and its foundations and its strength in your life for such a long time? How could he ever be free? And evidently he couldn't be free. There was nothing. It seems like he tried everything. As a matter of fact, the people in the town, you know what they did? I guess they were trying to help him in some way. But many times his demon seized him. And although he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, well, this is the way people sometimes think, well, we need to deal with it. We need some external force. And if we can lock him up, if we can get him in a straitjacket, if we can get him in chains, and if we can get him on the right medication, maybe this is going to help him. Now, by the way, I need to say, I probably should say it 100 times, but I won't. But I'll just say it once. I'm not saying that there are people in the world that have sometimes mental and medical problems, and it does need to be treated with medication. But I wonder sometimes if people have mental and therefore reoccurring medical problems, that's a spiritual issue. Okay, so I'm not choosing one or the other. So, in other words, I don't want anybody here to say, well, there, preacher said, get off my medication, I'll be all right. You did not hear that from me. But this man evidently had a spiritual problem. Do you see that? A spiritual problem. He was demon-possessed. And there was really no medication that's going to help him with that kind of problem. But the people thought, well, let's see what we can do to help. We can chain him up. We can lock him up. We can put a guard over him. But that's not going to help. He breaks free from all of that. Because his problem, his struggle is internal. From the inside, working its way out. And it's not going to be fixed by the outside trying to come in. So he had broken the chains. And he had been driven by the demon into solitary places. So he was so strong that none of these remedies are going to help him. And so what does he do? He runs to isolation. You see, a lot of times, even in the Bible, this picture kind of runs hand in hand. Because in the Gospels, the demon possession is talked about so often. But sometimes it is just a picture of sin. I mean, it's extreme sin. It's when a demon is controlling someone's life. But when we sin, we are certainly letting Satan into our lives. And so this is what happens when people are overcome by sin. And then the sin becomes habitual. And then the sin becomes an addiction. And then the sin becomes overwhelming. And what does that do to people? It drives them into isolation. That's why people that realize they're sinning and they have the guilt of the sin, they don't want to be around other people. And they especially don't want to be around Christians. And you're not going to find them in church. Because they're going to say, I don't want to go. I want to be left alone. Maybe it's a lot of guilt. Maybe it's shame. Maybe it's embarrassment. Maybe it's the realization, I don't think I will ever get better. I wonder what people are going to say. And so people are driven into a place where they are alone. In our society, sometimes there's people that are alone emotionally and relationally, although they may still have a job and they may still have a family. But they are driven into solitary places. And there they can never really deal with the problem. Noah's, this is Mark chapter 5, so again, this event shows up in 3 of the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And some of them give different perspectives and different information about what's going on. So Mark 5 says, no one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. It's another picture of what people do sometimes when they are overcome with sin. Wants to be on his own. He cries out. So literally screaming, crying, begging. But what else does he do? He cuts himself. And what do we say? We say, boy, that's a pretty new thing that we're doing. You know, we find out, you know, a lot of our, maybe more younger people, I don't know a lot of older people that cut themselves, but we have younger people that sometimes, I mean, they call them cutters. What are they doing? And I'm not saying they're demon-possessed. I'm just saying they've got some kind of an issue going on the inside, and they don't know how to deal with it. So what they say is, I'm so frustrated, I'm going to hurt myself. Maybe this pain that I'm going through, emotionally or even spiritually, I can find relief if I manifest the pain physically. So I'm literally going to hurt my body. And so this man would get stones and he'd cut himself trying to find relief from this internal oppression going on in his life. There's literally a revolution going on in his heart. And he's trying to say, how can I overcome this? How can I find something that could possibly be better? So when Jesus met him, Jesus asked the question, all we're doing right now is trying to find out who this man is and what's this all about. Jesus asked him, what's your name? And so now, as this man is before Jesus, this is the demon speaking. Because obviously this man had a name, and his name wasn't Legion. But the demons inside are speaking for him. And maybe we've seen people like that. Sometimes they act in a way that's just out of character. It's out of nature. It's not who they are. Sometimes we look at people and say, boy, they are becoming not more like a human. Why? Because humans are made in God's image. Instead, they are becoming more like an animal. They're still made in God's image, but they've been taken over, or maybe they've given themselves over, and now they're talking not in God's image, but it's in the image of something else, spiritual force, demons even working. I do believe demons do work today. I do believe, if you haven't noticed, there is sin in the world. You just have to turn on your local news outlet to find that. There's a lot of sin going on. There's a lot of evil happening in the world. So Satan and demons are involved in that. But this man said, my name is Legion. So back then, Legion was a commander of a Roman regiment. And many times, commentators would say that's about 6,000 people under him. A legion of in the army, 6,000. But I don't know. 4,000? Like, let's just call it 1,000. Right? Now, it's interesting. We're going to find out again from another gospel in Mark chapter 5 and verse 13. When Jesus, I'm going to give away the end of the story, but close your ears if you don't hear the end yet. But, you know, he cast out the demon and went into pigs. How many? About 35, 40, 100? No, 2,000 pigs. So I'm guessing must have been at least 2,000 demons in this man, one for each pig, but maybe two or three demons went into each pig. A lot of demons. A lot of control. His name is Legion. Because we are many. And they've gone into this man to dwell in him. So we do find that demons are very powerful. But we also see that demons want a place where they can live and where they can dwell. In Matthew, Jesus tells a story about a man who had a demon. And the demon had left him. And apparently the way you read it, it looks like it's because that man had decided to turn to God, and he decided to trust in God, and so now the demon was gone, it was expelled, it was evicted, or sometimes in our term today we call it exorcised. You can tell I'm not really big on exercise myself, so I don't use that word very often. But anyway, it was expelled. And then Jesus said, but what happens is that man never filled his life with anything good, anything worthwhile, anything worthy. And the demons are looking around for somewhere to live and to stay and to dwell. And they come back and they say, this man whom we've left, his life, his inward parts, his mind, his heart, his soul, it's clean. It looks nice. It's vacant. So he went back and got seven other demons worse than himself and said, hey, I got a great place for us all to go live. Let's go back into this guy. I've left, but now it's empty and ready for us to move right back in. And so he moved back in. Now as a hoarder. I mean, he doesn't even pay rent. But here he is indwelling a man's life. Because demons need somewhere where they can live. They kind of, today we would say, they do want a host where they can dwell. And so, again, demon possession today, where a demon is living within somebody and it's against their will, and they can do nothing to get rid of it, even if that does happen, we know the power of God can release them from that. But certainly people can invite Satan into their lives and evil and wickedness in the things that they think about and the things that they watch and the things that they do and people they hang around with, books that they read. They have all this information and they're feeding in this idea of evil and wickedness, Satanism, and the demons. Legion is living inside of this man. But we do find something else. When Jesus arrived, and this is from Matthew, there was two demon-possessed men. As a matter of fact, they were living here among the graveyards, but there may have been more than two. In other words, maybe there was a few people there, but there were two that came to Jesus. Now, Luke just focuses on the one. He doesn't want to confuse the issue, saying, well, is there one, is there two? And, you know, if I had said two from the very beginning, reading through Luke, you'd say, well, what happened to the other guy? It's like, Luke's like, I just want you to focus on the good guy, the one that was healed. I don't know, was the other guy healed? I don't know. So he's focusing on the one. But here it says, there were two demon-possessed men coming up from the tombs to meet Jesus, and they were so violent that no one could pass that way. So not only are these demons affecting their life, they're saying no one else can pass by. No one else can have a comfortable life. No one else is going to get a free ride. And we know people like that. It's kind of like, you know, you may have friends, you may have people at work, you have people in your family. And you think, that person, I mean, all they do is make life miserable for everybody. Seems like that's their mission in life. And that's what these demon-possessed people did. No one could even pass by. And so now they're isolated by themselves, in control of their area, which is amongst the tombs. But they're making life very difficult for other people. So we know the influence that demons can have on people. So Luke chapter 8 and verse 28, when this demon-possessed man, it was the demon again, who's speaking here? When he saw Jesus, he cried out and he fell at his feet. So that's interesting. See, what we see is the demons in this man responding to Jesus. How did they even know who Jesus was? And if Jesus said, well, my name is Jesus, or maybe he had the name tag. I don't know. But how would they know? Because there's a lot of people in that day whose names were Jesus. But the demons are spiritual. And they recognize something that's spiritual. So they recognized who Jesus was. And he wasn't just a good guy. He wasn't just a miracle worker. Look what they do. They fall at his feet in submission. Perhaps even to a certain degree of recognition. I'm not sure if it's worship. But certainly they're recognizing Jesus for his authority and for his power. And they said, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? That would have been very interesting if you were one of the disciples, right? Because see, they had just come across the lake, the storm, thought they were going to die. Jesus calms the storm. And what did they say? Who is this that even the winds and the waves obey him? It didn't look like anybody could answer the question. And so maybe Jesus is saying, it's okay, you don't have to answer the question. Wait till we get on shore. Let the demons answer the question. They know who I am. That's interesting. Most people in Jesus' life didn't recognize who he was. But demons do. Jesus, you are the Son of the Most High God. You are God in the flesh. You are the Messiah. You are the one. And now what they're going to say is, don't torture me. Don't torment me before the time. In other words, again, kind of reading through the Bible, we find out that Satan and the demons one day are all going to be thrown into the abyss. Even at this time, there are some that have been thrown into the abyss already, which today we would call, it could be either the waiting place or it's literally hell itself. And so they are already there. But evidently there are still some demons that are free to roam amongst the earth and torment people and tempt people and try to destroy people. You remember what John chapter 10 verse 10 says? Jesus says, the enemy, he's a thief, this Satan, he's a thief. And he has come to kill and to destroy. Satan just doesn't come to give you a hard time. He comes to steal your soul. Satan is here, you know, not just to tempt you to sin a little bit. He wants to damn your soul in hell. That's what Satan wants to do. So he's not playing around. He's not playing games. He's in serious warfare for your soul. And so here this demon is saying, don't cast me into the abyss. Not yet. He knows eventually he will be. He knows what his evident. Anyway, I was going to say, in the future, the word will come to me later. In the future, they know what their destiny is going to be. So they're saying, I don't want that now. Their eventual destiny. That's the word I'm looking for. Eventually, they know what's coming. Not right now. And so they ask Jesus to be cast out into the pigs. So it kind of gives us an idea of what this situation was like. Would you guess that these people who live in the area are Jews? Well, probably not raising pigs. Because first of all, the Jewish people wouldn't raise pigs, they wouldn't own pigs, they wouldn't feed pigs, they certainly wouldn't be eating pigs. So it seems like everybody in that area were Gentiles, which is good news, that Jesus came for everybody. But not just any Gentile, here's a demon-possessed Gentile, and even one that's living amongst the tombs, amongst the dead people, which again would be unclean in Jesus' day, to be close to dead bodies. And Jesus says, you go into the pigs. And when he did, the pigs rushed down the embankment. They were right there at the edge of the Sea of Galilee, rushed into the sea, and they all died. Well, that's pretty extreme, isn't it? I don't know. What do you think the response of the people would be? I mean, there's people in the town. So now they're going to come out wondering, what in the world is going on? So they came out, the people from the town, because the people watching the pigs went back into the town, told the people in the town everything that happened. They witnessed it all. And now, the people from the town come out. They have an interesting response, though. They found the man whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet. That's important. He was there sitting with Jesus, talking with Jesus. Probably talking about spiritual things, life things, healing things. Where do I go from here? How is this going to work in my life? And I'm sure Jesus was maybe even telling him, you know, you make sure you live your life that is full of God and God is full in you so that these demons do not come back. But sitting at Jesus' feet just means that he was there. He was very appreciative and thankful, but he was also listening to Jesus as he was teaching. Certainly a lot more than most of the other people in Jesus' day did. Sitting and listening to the words of Jesus' mouth. He was a student. We maybe today call him a disciple of Jesus. But secondly, he was dressed. Remember, he was naked before? But now he had clothes on. See, when he was demon-possessed, he had no covering. He had nothing in his life to protect him. But he was dressed. And then it says he was in his right mind. He was thinking clearly. He could see clearly. Now he's going to be living clearly. Now what does this look like to us? It looks like that at one time, this describes my life, that apart from Jesus, my life was a mess. Quite frankly, you don't have to live with me very long sometimes just to see. Even now sometimes my life's a mess. But through Christ, there can be healing. Through Christ, there can be a renewal, a new life. Through Christ, through reading his words, reading the Bible, understanding the scriptures, what's that going to help me to do? It's going to help me to listen to Jesus, to honor Jesus, to follow Jesus. It's going to clothe me and giving me protection, even from spiritual elements and spiritual forces, which may be described like the storm that they just came through on the water. By the way, how do you get clothed with Christ? Galatians says we are clothed with Christ through baptism. We put him on in baptism. That's how he's going to protect me and shield me from any future trouble like this. Never wants to get back into this situation again. Clothed with Christ. And now he can see things clearly because he's in his right mind. And he is clothed with Christ, sitting at Jesus' feet. And the people of the city, what's their response? Well, you think, how would you respond? Well, if I was the owner of the pigs, I wouldn't be very happy. Like, that's thousands and thousands today of dollars. It's gone. I mean, I wasn't just raising them as pets. I was raising them because that's my livelihood. The pigs are dead, so I'm not happy. But the people of the town says they were afraid. They're thinking, he has power. Power even over the evil spirits. So wouldn't you think we want to know him. We want to understand. We want to find out what he's about, and maybe he can help us. But they weren't like that. They were afraid. They asked Jesus to leave. Please go away. Leave this place. We don't want to be near you. We don't want to be around you. We don't want you to influence us. We don't want you to teach us. We don't want you doing any more of these miracles. Yeah, maybe they were more concerned about their pigs than they were of a man. Now, you know some people like that, don't you? I mean, they're more concerned about their pets than they are about people. This is a struggle that was going on then amongst the people and with Jesus. And now this man was kind of stuck in the middle. And so where does he go from here? And so all the people, the region of the Gerasenes, asked Jesus to leave them because they were so overcome with fear. So he got in a boat and he left. This is the way Jesus works. If you don't want him to be with you, he's not going to force his way in. He could have said, I'm not going anywhere. After this miracle, I got more stuff to do. I got more people to talk to. Jesus didn't say that. And he's not going to do that with us. If we say, Jesus, I don't want you in my life. Jesus, I've seen that you've helped other people. I don't want your help. I'm going to do this myself. I don't want to change. I'm quite happy living the way I am. I don't want a new life. I don't want hope. I don't want a better future. I don't want to be healed. I don't want you. I just want to continue the way I am. And Jesus is going to say, okay, if that's really what you want, I'll leave. And so Jesus always gives us a decision. Do you want me to stay? Do you want me to bless you? Do you want me to heal you? Do you want me to bring you back home in your right mind, putting you where you should be? It's a choice that we make. And so he left. So the response then of the man whom the demons had been cast out. He begged to go with Jesus. God, I just want to go with Jesus. I want to be a part of Jesus. I want to be the 13th disciple. Now, Jesus didn't say, there's not enough life jackets. No, that wasn't it. That's not what he said. He says, I want to go with you. So he was really committed. You see, when people's lives are really changed drastically and they recognize the change, I mean, he could have said, wow, what a coincidence. That's amazing. This all happened at the same time Jesus showed up. They didn't say, thank you, Jesus, you did an amazing thing in my life, but I'm going to go back and do my own thing. No, he wanted to surrender everything to Jesus. I'll go with you. But look what Jesus says. Don't come with me. He said, you go back home and tell how much God has done for you. And so the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. So this is what we call evangelism, right? So is it complicated? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people may have asked him questions and said, well, what was Jesus' last name? I mean, I don't know what they would have asked. How long were you there with him? Exactly how many disciples did he have? Right? I mean, they could have asked him all kinds of questions. But he wasn't concerned about the questions. Because his only thing that he needed to do is just say, just go tell people what God's done for you. And I think as Christians, we could probably all do that. Right? So if you're here today and you're not sure what God has done for you, it may be a good idea this afternoon to go home and to think, am I a Christian? Because if you can't think anything good, can't think of any good things that God's done for you, we've got big problems. Does that make sense? But if I can go and tell people, well, yeah, I don't know that much about the Bible, but I can tell you what God's done for me. I can say how he's worked in my life. I can tell you the little bit that I know. I mean, apparently this guy hadn't been to the seminary, the theological school. He hadn't been through Soul Winning Course 101, 10 weeks long, Wednesday nights. No, he hadn't been any of that. Just go and tell what God has done for you. So he did that. So I can do that. It's not complicated. As a matter of fact, it seems like he was probably excited to do that, to go and share how much Jesus had changed his life. And again, if we are Christians and we say, you know, I don't know if I've ever really had a change of life, a change of mind, a change of heart, a change of direction. Really? Right? I mean, we are constantly changing to become more like Christ. And so we have something to share with people. How much God has done for us, how he's changed me. He has turned me around. Literally being someone who's controlled by the evil influence of the world, controlled by sin, desire, addiction, controlled by Satan, maybe even demons, maybe even to the point where we feel like, I think maybe I was possessed by a demon because I invited them in over and over by my lifestyle and by my choices and by my actions. I just kept submitting to the demons and they just kept moving in. But to be set free, that's why Jesus came. To be free from the control and the power and the deceit of Satan. To be free from the punishment, not only in this life, but eternal punishment that comes from being controlled by Satan. Jesus came so that he would give us life. And so we're going to sing a song. O heart, bow down with sorrow. You know, there's people here today that hearts bow down with, I mean, you're just under the burden. Just kind of feel you're in a losing game. You're feeling discouraged. You're feeling ready to give up. You're feeling that you've tried as much as you possibly can try. You've talked to all the experts. People have tried to control you externally. But Jesus says the change comes from the inside out. And so today, if we can encourage you in your Christian walk, we talked about being clothed in Christ. Maybe there's people today that need to be clothed in Christ, covered in Christ, blessed by Christ, forgiven through Christ. And if today you want that to be baptized, you can put on the clothing of Christ. If we can be a blessing, let's stand, we'll sing the song, and let us know how we can serve you.